It seems Albert Smith and journalism were destined for each other. You recall in your book that your first sentence uttered on your potty, of all places, was "Hand me the Saturday Evening Post." Is that true?
Wait a minute. It was "Hand me the Saturday Evening Post, please." Now, right. That whole story was told by my mother, my proud mother, who told it to me later, claiming that was my first sentence. We were a household of magazine readers down in Sarasota in the late 20s and the early 30s in the Depression. Collier's, the Saturday Evening Post, Red Book, Ladies' Home Journal, Woman's Home Companion, Liberty Magazine, on and on and on. And she was trying to brag on her little baby son as being so bright he was reading early. And that was her story, and I thought it was funny, and so I stuck it into the book. And I think something like that was probably true. It's certainly true that that's what she said was my first complete sentence. And I think, you know, hell, Ron, she was a storyteller too. She'd been a newspaper woman. She may have made part of that up, but she told it to friends. And then later, when I was older, she told me that's what she told them.
Well, suffice it to say, you got off to a fast start.
Well, and I got off the potty too.
Okay. Then you started. It's pretty clear from your book and anyone familiar with your background, Al, from your newspaper days to the decades as a news program host on Kentucky Educational Television, that journalism has been in your blood for a long, long time. Can you explain that? Why do you feel
sure.
so strongly
well,
about it?
I write somewhere that some of the best teachers in my life were our most influential people, perhaps with most of us, were family members, early friends of the family who talked in front of me and so on. And my grandmother Smith, my father's mother, and my grandfather Smith, whom we call the Major because of a title he had in World War I that stuck with him as a civilian, they had owned a country newspaper in Cookeville, Tennessee, on the plateau. Cookeville was a town a little like Corbin in your area of listeners for your station, and a railroad town, a plateau town, and a town of that always wanted to be bigger. Anyway, my grandparents had the paper there, and in Florida, when I was 4, 5, 6, they would tell me stories about their life in Cookeville. They outgrew Cookeville and moved to Nashville after World War I. But the Cookeville stories were fascinating for me. My father told me about sweeping up plate glass that was broken when someone would throw a brick through the wall, the glass storefront of the newspaper, because they were mad at something my grandmother or my grandfather wrote in the paper. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, Tennessee, about 30 miles, 20 miles east of Nashville, but on the way to Cookeville up in the mountains, my mother, as a teenager, was an editor for a little weekly paper in Lebanon. And she would tell me stories. Mother didn't go to college. And she would tell me stories about editing the paper in Lebanon. And we were newspaper readers. We got the Tampa paper down in Sarasota, 60 miles to the south. Sarasota then was about the size of Harrodsburg, perhaps. It's now as large as Lexington. And I have a small condo near the beach down there that I bought many years later. And we left Sarasota when I was very young, 12 years old. Dad went broke down there, and he had a drinking problem he drank his way out of Sarasota just as I drank my way out of New Orleans many, many years later after 10 years working on newspapers down there. The answer is papers were a way describing and remembering the life of my parents, the early lives of my parents and my grandparents. And I caught the bug there was a cartoonist in the Tampa paper who was very good, and I used to look at his cartoons when I was about 8 or 9. And once I got through the first grade or third grade, I remember writing a letter to the Tampa paper about his cartoons, and he wrote me a really nice letter back and sent me a copy of one of his cartoons, and I was probably about 10 then, so I was pretty hooked.
Well, you mentioned alcohol afflicting your father and yourself in your younger years, and it almost got the best of you. This addiction, if I can call it that, to alcohol crops up an awful lot in the first half of your book, which you call The Thirsty Years.
Right.
Why do you feel it was necessary to bare your soul, so to speak, about your personal problem in the book?
That's a tremendously astute question. Yes, why? I have got several friends who were very close to me. One of them, two of them I knew for about 5 years before either one of them ever told me they had an alcoholic past, and before either one of them ever told me they had had the experience of going through a 12-step group and sobering up, well, bluntly, in the AA program, Alcoholics Anonymous, which, as you know, is a fellowship of men and women who have suffered from problems of alcoholism and working together, talking their way through their experiences and sharing their troubles together, and then kind of mastering the 12 steps, which are really spiritual steps of recovery, kind of pull through it, at least some of them do. Well, anyway, these two friends of mine were completely faithful to the notion of anonymity, staying quiet about yourself and concentrating on just your problem. Why my alcoholism story got public, why I bared my soul in that book, probably begins with an interview that a great Kentucky journalist, John Ed Pierce, did with me back in the 70s, early 70s. He came from the Courier-Journal down to Russellville to write a story about small towns and how they were changing in the 70s. He interviewed me, and when he got back to Louisville, he decided to make the piece for the Courier-Journal magazine really about me and the small town of Russellville, to which I came in 1958 after I was fired off the second New Orleans paper. And I was very much an alcoholic in Russellville in those early days and struggling with the problem. And during that interview, John Ed asked me how I happened to come to Russellville after having had some really good jobs on the New Orleans papers in my 20s. And I couldn't think of anything to do but to tell him the truth. And I said, I drank my way off those papers, John. And he said, well, why are you sober today? Well, what the dickens was I going to say to him? I said, well, here in this little town, which I thought was a nothing, and then I was finished with my life at age 30, I found out it was everything for me, because after 5 years of off and on against sobriety, I found myself recovering in the basement of a little church where there were AA meetings on Monday nights. And so I had broken my anonymity, which is against the practices and principles of AA, but I had also told him the truth, which is part of journalism. And that was all. That sobriety came to me nearly 50 years ago. So why did I write about it in the beginning of the book? Because the insanity of my alcoholic addictive behavior affected everything that happened to me in my youth. And how could I write about it without at least ascribing the reasons for things such as dropping out of Vanderbilt, where I had 2 scholarships that covered everything in that expensive university after I came home from the Army, dropping out because I couldn't really get myself to classes. By 2019, when I came out of the Army, I was already an alcoholic and compulsively drinking. And I went down to New Orleans, and there I earned some respect and great promotions. By the time I was 23, I was state editor of the biggest paper in the South, covering all the news, from editing all the news from correspondents in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama and reporters in Washington, and really beginning to drink a lot of whiskey every day. Lost a marriage, lost money, lost my savings. And then I just walked off that job, switched to an afternoon rival paper out of anger. And there they said, don't drink. We hear you drink a lot. Be careful with that, but we like your writing. And I became a reporter covering some of the worst crimes you can imagine and the mafia operations in New Orleans and continuing to drink and continuing to try to hold responsible jobs. Lost that. And wound up really finished, I thought, in the only job I could get, a little weekly paper of 3,000 circulation in a little town 60 miles north of Nashville. How did I emerge out of that area to get control of the whiskey, throw the bottles away, wind up owning the little paper that I sneered at, and finally six or seven more newspapers, including the biggest weekly in Kentucky at London, Kentucky, not so far from Richmond, the base for Eastern Kentucky University's wonderful station that we're talking over, and on to Washington and running a big program for President Carter and then for President Reagan. How did all that happen? Well, a lot of it developed through the struggle I had with booze. So that's why I bared my soul, not to say, look at great me, I did these things, but I hope to tell a reasonable story of what I call my life in journalism that would account, I mean, that explained how I got to where I got and the battles I had, and partly to tell a story, because I'm a storyteller. That's what journalism is about. But also, perhaps to help somebody else who's struggling. I doubt there's anybody listening to this program who hasn't got someone in their family or in their network of friends who is battling with some form of addiction. And they need to know that one can recover. And also, they need to know about forgiveness. There's a lot of charity, a lot of generosity in the hearts of American people. And, you know, we have a rural base in Kentucky. 45% of Kentucky is still pretty rural. And there's a kind of a religious underpinning in our lives. We may be rough people. We may be sinners. But we love a sinner who's trying to, you know, overcome his sins. And so they love a story. And I tell the story. And I think maybe this will help somebody who is about to despair over a child, a nephew, a niece, something like that, or a sister, and who are trying to help them and think, well, there's nothing can be done for them. There is something that can be done, and there is hope, and there is recovery. And for me, it was through the 12-step program. I got help, and I was a man in need of help. I found it in the most unlikely place, in a little corner of Kentucky. And from there, I climbed out of my problems, I threw away the bottle, and I wound up working for two presidents of the United States in Washington.
Veteran journalist Al Smith talking about his new book, Wordsmith, My Life in Journalism.